So, for this retreat, the theme for the Dharma talks will be right intention. And right intention is the second factor of the Eightfold Path. And the Eightfold Path is meant to be you. The Eightfold Path is not meant to be something out there that you find and you walk on and it's going to take you someplace. But the Eightfold Path is meant to be you. You're supposed to become the Eightfold Path, but not by assuming someone else's idea of who you're supposed to be, but really by really settling in and relaxing and dropping into the depth of who you are. You probably discover that how you live your life is characterized by the Eightfold Path. There's something about a deep authenticity and honesty and connectedness and presence here that seems to manifest itself in having right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. It's a phenomenal thing. And then there's a wonderful way in which this Dharma practice is really meant to honor our uniqueness, our individuality, our unique qualities of who we are. Not to obliterate it, but really kind of you get to become yourself. But in doing so, many people find that they shed all the ways in which they live, which really is not really who they are. Many people assume identities, attitudes, intentions, actions, behavior, that maybe once upon a time was useful. Maybe once upon a time was an attempt to try to find happiness. But that over time, it really is not who we are. And so to learn to kind of settle in and let the extra things begin to fall away and to really find out who we are, be who we are. And the amazing thing is it seems that this thing called the Eightfold Path, which is often presented as these practices you're supposed to do that are kind of like out there or things you're supposed to adopt, they really kind of merge to who you are. They're not distinct from you. So the second one is right intention. And the word for intention is sankappa. And it's not exactly clear how to translate it. It literally means something like with thought, with thinking. And some people actually translate it as right thought or right thinking. I kind of like to think of it as right attitude or the right way of thinking about things. Some people have tried right resolve. Intention works pretty well because intention is such an amazingly significant part of our life, such an important one. The intentions, the motivations, the sense of purpose we operate under, the aspirations that kind of animate us, these are all so central to our whole enterprise of being human that to spend some time really focusing and looking at those and taking good care of them is a very important part of Dharma practice. And it's said by the Buddha that there are three intentions or three ways of thinking or three attitudes of how we live our life which make up right intention. I'm sure there's lots of other right intentions. This isn't a limited list. But these are held up as being particularly significant for people who want to, in the traditional language, people who want to find liberation. People who want to move towards setting the heart free. In the language I'm talking about tonight, these right intentions are a particularly useful way of discovering ourselves in our authenticity of who we really are, settling in and really being present here in this world so that our authentic way of being can be supportive and helpful for the world around us as well. So these three right intentions, I'll list them in a non-traditional order and then I'll tell you why afterwards. So the first I'll mention, non-harming, ahimsa. And this is what the word that Mahatma Gandhi introduced to the wide world when he had his non-violent action in India, the idea of ahimsa. This is an ancient Indian idea that even the Buddha taught. And so one of the right intentions is ahimsa, non-harming. Because non-harming, the way that the Pali language works, the ahimsa, not harm, implies the positive opposite of that, of harm, which is loving-kindness. And so it's not just simply avoiding harming, but it's also stepping into the world with loving-kindness, with goodwill, with kindness for it. A second of the three right intentions is non-cruelty or non-hostility. The corollary for that, that goes along with that, or the kind of synonym for that, is compassion. Because again, when the negative prefix is used in Pali, it sometimes implies the positive opposite. So non-cruelty is compassion. The third is a Pali word that's called nikamma, which usually translated into English as renunciation. So this is usually the one listed first. But too many people, if I say it, we say it first, stop listening. It's like, you know, like, I'm out of here. You know, renunciation, these Buddhists, you know, they're like, this Buddhism stuff is, they're like party poopers. Like, you know, it's always, you know, that here we go again, let go, you know, maybe I got off at the wrong bus stop or something. These Buddhists, especially all of you are dancers in here, right? Like, you know, now you can't have fun because you've become a Buddhist. No, you know, just let go, renunciation. The connotations of renunciations are probably different than what they are in Pali, nikamma. It's a pun, because nikamma is a pun on the first of the wrong intentions, and because kamma means lust, and in the worst senses of the term lust, it's not a good thing for us. It's not healthy for us. It's not healthy for others. So nikamma is non-lust. But it's kind of a wordplay, because it's not really that word. It kind of looks like it. It sounds like it. It also means kind of also related to or associated with the word going forth. And the association is going forth out of a narrow, confined, dusty life. So imagine that you have, the story I like to tell of being up in the mountains, snowed in a small little cabin for 3 months, can't leave. And you're with all your relatives in a one-room cabin. You love your relatives, but, you know, 3 months in this little cabin. And so finally, the snow melts, and you can open the door and go out. And you go out and go forth out of the cabin. It just feels like so much freedom and so much, you know, it feels so good. You're finally set free, and you can breathe, and it's great. So that's the connotation more of the Pali word nikamma. It's not focusing on what you leave behind. It's more focusing on what you gain. You gain freedom. You gain the happiness of liberation. It's a beautiful thing to let go, because we're letting go into something profound and wonderful. And that which we're letting go into is found in our own hearts, found in this world of ours, as treasures. And so our intentions we have are treasures. The Buddha has talked about loving kindness as a treasure. He said that the treasure for monastics are people who have renounced many of the usual things that people base their life on, money and sexuality and security of a certain kind. And so they don't have, you know, they don't save wealth, you know, physical wealth, but their wealth for a monastic is their loving kindness. That's, you know, the value, the treasure. Non-harming is a wealth for the whole society. To create safety for the people around us is a gift. And so to live a life of non-harming is to live a life that you're gifting the world, something that many people lack, safety. That's a treasure that we offer. Compassion and non-cruelty create beautiful societies and create beautiful conditions for ourselves. To live with a compassionate heart that cares and concern for others is a way of nourishing ourselves. And part of the art of compassionate living is to understand how to be compassionate so we feel nourished and I don't want to use the word happy, but we feel in harmony with ourselves and the world, not oppressed or distressed by the suffering of the world. That the feeling of compassion is actually a beautiful feeling. It's a treasure that we have. And then the treasure of freedom, the treasure of letting go of what limits us and confines us and keeps us dusty and narrow and small. It's a treasure to have a heart and a mind that's open and free, that's unbounded and joyous, that's not inhibited, that's not afraid, that's not contracted and twisted in hate or resentment or regrets, but really feels at ease and at home in itself, is willing to kind of just be here in a full and open way. And so to have the intention of renunciation, to have the intention or the attitude of loving kindness, to have a way of thinking, a way of looking and being that's compassionate. These are three really important intentions or attitudes that really support the Dharma practice. The practice on the retreat, the practice off of the retreat. And again, you can have many other intentions, many other things your wisdom has to bring into bear when you live your life. But to go around with those attitudes close at hand, and to base your life on those treasures, to discover how to do it wisely, so it's beneficial for you and beneficial for others. You're not diminished by this, but you become more fully yourself. There's an authenticity that you find by finding what is it for you to appropriately let go? What is it for you to appropriately have goodwill, loving kindness? What is it for you to have compassion? Not to listen to like a should from teachers, like you should do it this way, but what comes forth from you? It has attitude, this wish, this desire. Let this be the attitude I live by. Let this be the guide for how I discover myself and discover the world around me. These are the three right intentions that the Buddha championed as part of the Eightfold Path. So in the course of this retreat, we'll give three Dharma talks, one on each of those right intentions as we explore it. And I hope that as we give these talks, that you will take the talks as a, I don't know if a mirror, well, it'd be nice if it was a mirror, that you listen to the talks and somehow you see yourself in what we're talking about. You see in yourself renunciation and loving kindness and compassion. And if you don't see yourself in those things that he's talked about, we hope that these themes are something that you find enlivening and engaging to consider and reflect on and explore in yourself, what your relationship to them are and how they live in you and what value they have for you and where they have value for you. And maybe come and meet with John and I, maybe have a chance to talk to us about it as well. We certainly don't want to use the word right and right intention to imply obligation, to imply that, you know, thou shalt be this way or else, or that if you don't have right intention that somehow you're wrong. think the authenticity of practice is to really be honest in mindfulness of how you really are and have space for that, to allow for it. So if you find yourself here in this retreat anything but having the three right intentions, you're full of clinging. You're not going to let go at all. You're full of ill will for everyone around you. And you're full of cruelty. Welcome to the retreat. You're welcome here. Be a little careful it doesn't spill over into others, but you're allowed to be as you are in mindfulness practice. And the reason we can say that is that there's something about settling in and being really honest of what's here for you without inhibition, without feeling bad about yourself, and just being honestly present for what is a way that allows the whole system of who we are to slough off what is not authentically ours, not authentically us. And the chances are pretty good as you do that and settle in that over time you will discover the three right intentions are treasures waiting for you. Thank you.
So as part of getting direction for this retreat, we're going to do some of the formalities of really, in a sense, it's empowering the space, empowering us, which has to do with the taking the refuges. Simple, it really is a power that that gives us as a community direction. And in doing that, we will just chant these. And, you know, sometimes I think they bring lots of blessing as a means or a power to the community. And then we'll take the precepts, which have a lot to do with intention, for how we hold the community. So we'll just do this in the call and response in Pali. And the first part is just really honoring the Buddha that through his own practice he awakened. And then we take the refuges of in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Namo Dasa Bhagavato Arahato Samha Sambuddhasa Namo Dasa Bhagavato Arahato Samha Sambuddhasa Namo Dasa Bhagavato Arahato Samha Sambuddhasa Buddham Saranam Gacchami Dhammam Saranam Gacchami Sangam Saranam Gacchami Dutiyampi Buddham.
Saranam.
Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Dhammam. Saranam. Gacchami. Dutiyampi. Sangam. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Buddham. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Dhammam. Saranam. Gacchami. Tatiyampi. Sangam. Saranam. Gacchami. So in many ways, this is creating for the community a kind of one voice and one direction, which really is honoring the path of awakening. And along with that, as we create direction, we also need a kind of agreement here. And so traditionally, we will take the precepts as a community and just, again, call and responsibly in English. For the purpose of training,
I
undertake the precept
of non-harming.
For the purpose of training,
I undertake the precept
of not taking what is not given.
For the purpose of training,
I undertake the precept
of being celibate.
For the purpose of training,
I undertake the precept
of keeping silence.
For the purpose of training,
I undertake the precept
of abstaining from intoxicants.
So these are, in a sense, the formalities of, as a community, giving direction, as well as creating a community that adheres to these simple precepts of non-harming. Again, these particularly these precepts we'll be working with, I think, somewhat in the Dharma talks to clarify the fact that there's also, you know, it says not to, but also it's supporting the truth around life, such a precious thing, of honoring possessions of others, of keeping it simple. Really, the celibacy is really about just keeping it really simple, so that we are just, we stay with ourselves, and that the silence part, I think, you know, first, actually 2 years, the teacher I had said, don't write a read, you know, and it was great because it was really about, okay, I'm just going to take the time to experience what is going on inside me. Because that's really what these practices are, turning around and kind of taking that inward view of how we operate. So again, there may be a little bit of speaking here and there, particularly with Gil and I, and maybe with the kitchen. Otherwise, the truth here of silence is an incredibly powerful tool that we have. And I don't think I need to say anything about intoxicants. I think that's extra, since I think there's already an agreement here around that, coming and sustaining it in some way. So,
with that, we are entering into the silent part of the retreat, the formal retreat. You're welcome to stay and sit here in the hall as long as you wish this evening, though I would encourage you to go to bed early, as earlier the better, and get a good night's sleep. The wake-up bell will be at 5:30. 6 o'clock is a sitting in here, and that Sangha service period is at 6:40. And during that time, the managers will be around, floating around, both of them. If you have any questions about the tools you need or anything to do with the little job that you have, the managers are available to check in with at that time. And I feel fortunate to be on retreat with all of you. I hope that you all feel the benefits of sharing this life together for these days, and that these days are one of mutual support for all of us. Thank you.